for June 5th, 2007 will come to order. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 859. Colleagues, if you'll recall what we were doing on this bill, this is the charitable checkoff bill, and what we were looking at were amendments having to do with the issue of the non-game wildlife fund, and we've received the new amendment. And Chris, why don't you pick it up? Dash fives.
And the dash A fives replaced the dash A fours. And if you'll recall, the dash A fours exempted the non-game and wildlife from being thrown into the mix and would require them to be listed on the return indefinitely. What the dash A fives do, they allow that through tax year 2011. So there's a sunset to that provision. So starting with tax year 2012, the non-game fish and wildlife would become one of the mix, and they would be in the rotation piece. So it does that. And one other piece that the A5 does is it adds some language that was missed in the original drafting of the bill, that deleted language that referenced those dollar checkoff boxes, because the only way to get the 12 entities on the return is to remove those dollar checkoff boxes, the actual box that says $1, $5, or $10.
Mm. So now, under this bill, a person would have to fill in the amount.
Correct,
on
Mr.
a line. Okay. All right. Thank you. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the adoption of the dash A5 amendments.
Representative Reed moves the adoption of the A5 amendments. Discussion. I don't see any. Is there objection to the A5s? Not seeing any. The A5s are adopted. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 859 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reed moves Senate Bill 859 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? I don't see any. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Olden?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
Butler votes yes.
Okay. Did we get everybody? Representative Bruton is excused. Thank you. The motion having received the required majority, the bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier? Who would like to carry? Representative Gelser will carry. And with that, we've concluded on this bill, so we close the work session. Thank you. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2691. Colleagues, just a quick history on this bill. We had a public hearing on this bill earlier, but what we're proposing now is a shift of emphasis on the bill and a gut and stuff. For history purposes, be aware that the Transportation Committee sent to the floor a bill that does exactly what's in this bill, what's in the Dash 8 proposal. But the bill was passed by the House and sent to the Senate. In the Senate, the bill went to the Transportation Committee, and failed to come out of that committee at closing time. So the bill died. And the purpose of the Dash 8, moving the Dash 8 amendments at this time, is to revitalize that idea. And that being the introduction, Mazin, why don't you tell us what the Dash 8 actually do?
Mr. Chair, also, to refresh your memory on the bill itself, the bill allows for the counties to impose registration fees twice as much as the allowable rate for the state. And the bill is about 17 lines long. However, the amendment, it still stays with the same subject. It just deletes all of the bill. And what it allows, it takes out in ORS 203.055 the requirement that when a county is to increase registration fee on a county level, that it goes to the voter. So it takes out the voter approval requirement for that purpose. And in that way, it allows the governing body of the county to do so and increase the registration fee in the county vehicles, or for county vehicles, or vehicles residing in the county, up to the level of where the state registration fee is.
Thank you. So the discussion we had earlier about doubling or tripling just goes away. It's not in this bill. It's in the Dash 8. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2691.
Thank you. Representative Reed moves the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2691. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Reed. Representative Butler, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically with the Dash 8 amendment, it allows up to the amount that the state is presently collecting, which is $54, as I recall.
A biennium.
Per biennium, right. And so that this could be administered locally, collected locally, or through the Department of Motor Vehicles, and then the receipt itself then could be transmitted back to the county. It's my recollection that these were all in constitutionally dedicated funds that have all of the fund protections in the county, that is, the county road fund, in this particular instance. We had testimony that the $27 that we originally looked at would not fully replace dollar for dollar the amount of money lost under the public law 106-393. Do we know what $54 could have the potential of doing in terms of total number of dollars lost in relationship to total number of dollars that could be restored to counties?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the process, of course, is, well, first of all, just to make it clear, the counties would have to go to the state, to the DMV, to collect the registration fee. So they would collect through DMV process.
Well, I understand that under this process, they would pass a county ordinance in county commission meeting and then provide a copy of it to the DMV so that effective on date certain that the DMV could begin the process. Are there any fees that are then charged back to the county for this collection process?
I think since this is left to DMV to set by rule, that they could potentially be. All DMV fees, if you will, are the cost for the collection of the fee is recovered from the top of the revenue stream. However, because that process already occurs, I don't think the amounts could be numerous.
And finally, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding, and again from the prior testimony that was offered on the bill itself without the Dash 8 amendment, that, and the Dash 8 amendment continues in this regard, could basically be done by ordinance without any vote of the electorate, county by county.
That's my understanding, except that, of course, there are referral processes for county ordinances, and so this would apply in the same way as any other ordinance to raise money. There is a provision in every county for a referral by petition. Or a referral by the commissioners, if they so choose, by the county governing body, if they choose to do that. This would simply put this fee on a par with the other ways in which the counties could raise money.
Mr. Chair, so that's part of the 90-day period before it's implemented then for the referral?
Representative Olson, you've gotten past the level of my knowledge with that question. Maybe Mazin knows the answer to it. He's referring to the fact that there is a time period during which an ordinance to raise money cannot go into effect in order to in order to allow for a petition. I'm getting head nods from the county people in the audience.
That is correct.
So just like we can't add an emergency clause to a tax bill, counties can't bring into effect immediately an ordinance that would raise money this way. But not by this law, because of their operation of their general operating laws.
Do you know what the number of signatures would be that are needed for collection in order to send this as a referral from voters?
Do you know?
15%.
It's not the percentage. 15% of the last year's election, I think.
My belief is that it depends on the governing charter of the county, but I may be wrong about that. It may be the same in every county. I don't believe it is.
I'm not certain, Mr. Chair, but we could inquire from the legislative council.
Is that an important issue for you?
Well, it sounds like we have. I mean, there's sideboards in place.
Absolutely. And it's the same ones that would be in place for an ordinance to raise a tax in the county.
Okay. Most county taxes, however, are done by vote.
Well, they are, but the counties, most counties do have the authority to levy taxes by ordinance.
Most counties do not,
they
Major
don't.
Chair.
I
do not think so.
All right,
cities do, counties do not.
That's not my understanding.
My recollection.
Okay.
Do you have somebody from the counties here?
Nobody who claims to... Nobody's going to claim knowledge.
Okay.
Counties all operate differently, obviously. Yeah.
With the exception, of course. I mean, there are counties that do levy a lot of taxes, and some don't levy much taxes at all. And it's on the home rule versus not home rule, and so on.
One final yes, question I had, Mr. Chair, and that is that right now it's contemplated that the fees at $54 at the state level, if those were increased right now, those would fold together and could be counted and collected or added to by the county, so that if the state goes from $54 to $64, then counties could do the same thing again by local rule.
And Representative Butler, they're up to the state level.
Right.
So they could only go $10 rather than go all the way to 54. But up to the amount that the state goes to.
But presently the state is at $54. This allows the
That's
county
correct.
To go to $54.
Right.
If the state went an additional $10 to $64, then counties would automatically,
get that.
Notwithstanding any other change in the law, and counties would have the ability to do that. Is that correct?
Right. And the rule of the thumb that we've worked with Representative Butler, that $10 of registration fee is equivalent to about a penny of gas tax.
Of course, that's assuming that the counties all adopted this.
That's correct.
This provision. In fact, the odds are that most of them won't, aren't they?
That's correct. And most of them might not go up to the full limit of increase. Some would go 5. Some would go 10. It seems that it's probably unlikely, with the exception of one or two counties, that the ability of the taxing power to go all the way to the maximum amount allowed.
Do you want to be heard on this?
Mr. Chair, if I can help answer some questions, I'd be happy.
Well, do you want to come to the mic and identify yourself for the record, and then you may have some comments on the questions that have already been asked, and then we may have some more.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. I think the purpose of this bill or this amendment at this point is to provide counties with the full range of options to either consider an ordinance that would apply a local vehicle registration fee for light vehicles. Only light vehicles at this point are involved. They could adopt an ordinance which would implement that. they could propose an ordinance and refer that to the electorate. They could propose an ordinance and decide not to do anything after going through the hearings process. Or they could propose an ordinance and amend it to based on the comments that they hear from the public and also the cities at this point, to rather than do a $27 fee, only do a $15 fee. So they have a full range of options at this point. So that's the intent of the bill at this point. I think it's important also to recognize, although this is a county wide fee for vehicle registration, it is shared 60% with the county, 40% of the money goes to the cities within the county at this point. So it 100% of the money that's raised here does not stay in the hands of the county at this point. Probably you would see, Mr. Chair, excuse me, I apologize. Mr. Chair, you'll see the mid-range or mid-sized counties to larger counties maybe consider availing themselves of this tool. But I don't think, you know, that very small counties that have very small population, they wouldn't raise that much money doing this, and you have some counties that only have several thousand people at this point. So I don't think those counties would propose to do this at this point. And if a county does enact an ordinance that would implement a local registration fee, then it is subject to referendum, and the citizens who are, shall we say, have an issue with that do have the opportunity to collect the necessary signatures, and I do believe it's based on a percentage of those people that voted at the last general election, as it is in other areas at this point, and that's going to vary based on, you know, from county to county. Then you have some counties that are home rule counties, and then you have some that are based on, you know, the state statutes at this point, how they operate. So I hope that helps, Mr. Chair, and if there's other questions members have that I might be able to answer, I certainly will try and do that.
Well, one that came up was the question of whether or not non-home rule counties, ones based on the statute, have general taxing authority now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as it relates to gas tax and vehicle registration, counties must refer those to the electorate before they can implement either an local gas tax or the vehicle registration fee. Certainly with regard to property tax and other things, there are, you know, we have the limitations, and you can only go to a certain place unless you propose a special levy that would be outside of the Measure 50 requirements at this point. And those, needless to say, then go to a vote of the electorate within the county to establish those.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Slack? Representative Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure this is a question for Mr. Slack, but I do want to point out, and I do support this, but that 90-day lead time before this could be imposed was in a previous version of the amendments. It does not appear to be in this Dash 8 amendment. So my reading of this language is that the county could impose this registration fee without any lead time, and I'm not familiar with what the referendum provisions are county to county, but I don't know whether that would prevent a referendum from happening.
Representative, would you point to the previous rendition?
Well, in my file I have a Dash 6 amendment.
I'm looking at it.
In that Dash 6 on page 3, which was page 3, so that was section 1.7A, it did have a provision that said at least 90 days before a district can impose a registration fee, it must give notice of the proposed fee, and then listed the districts that overlap the county, each city within the county.
Mr. Chair,
This was part of, if you remember, what was termed as a spider web thing
This is a specific exception from the normal rule, isn't it?
It is, in order to be able to craft intergovernmental agreements between counties, cities, and metros, districts, in order to come up with a way of crafting which laws and which increases would be done. But I think the 90 days for the election or to take a referendum is probably a blanket type of law rather than only allowable with the statutes that exist here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this section of the statutes deals not only with counties but also districts, and in the Portland metro area, there is like Metro, and also there is TriMet, and both of those are districts that could avail themselves of a local vehicle registration fee, but this proposal does not change the requirement that they would have to refer a measure to the ballot before they would implement it. It only addresses the provision as it relates to counties. So that's part of the reason why you won't see in the dash eights the same language, because none of that's being changed, and the spider web isn't being proposed to be changed either.
Mm-hmm.
How the counties in the metro area interrelate not only with the special districts, TriMet and Metro, but also the cities and other counties. It's as you recall, it was called a spider web, and it truly is.
Thank you. If the counties or Metro wants us to look at the spider web, I would suggest that they bring it
another
separate bill and take it to the committee that deals primarily with government organizational issues. We'll try to stick with the tax law. It may work better for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Other comments? Discussion? Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I remain bothered by removing the electors from this process. I will vote for this amendment to get it in the bill, but I will not vote for the bill with this amendment.
Thank you. A further discussion? Is there objection to the amendment? I don't see any. The amendment is adopted. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2691 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Reed moves House Bill 2691 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I am a strong proponent. My background is with local government, and I appreciate the fact that this is being brought forward. I am very anxious now that we're giving an opportunity for counties to do this, to collect the full amount as opposed to previously half of the amount, and I don't know which counties have. I think there was some testimony that some had attempted this. I think that we had county commissioners actually and county chairs come forward and say that they really wanted to have this opportunity, but that they were concerned that they could never pass it unless they did do it by fiat. And I'm anxious about that approach, and I'm going to express my concern, the same concern that Representative Berger has expressed, and that is that by removing the ability of this local vote, that then puts counties and cities on the same level. I appreciate the fact that this money is divided 60-40, which counties would, or which cities would like to have collected on their behalf anyway. But I'm very anxious and hope that cities and counties that would propose to do this, if it were to become law, would work hand in glove and have the public hearing process, and then after the necessary number of public hearings, move forward with these kinds of impositions of taxes, particularly in light of the loss of the Federal Forest Safety Net and Secure School Funds. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Other comments? Just one quick one. I'm very conscious of the passage of time. Senator Walker? No? I'm very conscious of the passage of time and the fact that this is a House bill that needs to get to the Senate if it's to be considered I recognize that there may still be some questions about the bill. My proposal is that we pass the bill out today, send it to the floor. Probably I would ask Representative Beyer, since it was the same bill as she carried before, to carry the bill, if she's willing to do that. And in the meantime, hopefully we can get the questions answered that people have raised about the various issues that have come up. If it turns out that those questions lead to a constitutional problem, answers to those questions lead to a constitutional problem, we can bring the bill back to committee, or we can get it to the Senate for passage. Other discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Berger?
No.
Representative Brun excused. Representative Butler?
No.
Representative Gelson?
Yes.
Representative Bolton?
No.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair Barnett?
Aye. The bill having received the required majority, the motion having received the required majority, the bill goes to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. And as I indicated, I'll ask Representative Beyer to carry, and if she doesn't want to, I'll ask someone else. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2691 and open a work session on House Bill 3488. Do you have something for us? Do you want to give us a summary, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3488 as drafted modified the Betsy and Rutsy credits. You have in front of you a dash A6, which replaces the bill and does two things. It increases the property tax piece of the Rutsy credit. Currently, under current law, the value of the solar, geothermal, wind, water, or fuel cell or methane gas energy systems are exempt from the property tax. This would expand that definition to include property owned or leased by a person whose principal business activity is directly or indirectly the production, transportation, or distribution of energy if the system is a net metering system or other system primarily designed to offset on-site electricity use by the person. And that's contained in Section 1. And then Section 3, the other substantive section, would allow a public utility to provide no-interest loans. This Section 3 was in the original 3488. That part was carried over, but that Section 1 is a new piece.
Thank you. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, and I testified on this bill before this committee a few weeks ago with John Miller, the Executive Director of the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association. And at that time, we presented testimony about the amendment that was just outlined in Section 1. Currently, the way the statute reads is that if you own or lease property for a principal business activity directly or indirectly related to production, transportation, or distribution of energy, you are subject to property tax. What we are proposing here is expanding the applying the exemption from property tax to on-site production. This would facilitate kind of a new model of particularly solar generation, but there are other types of renewable generation that could take advantage of this as well. I passed out to you a memo dated today with a paragraph kind of describing an application, and there are several applications that are in process around the state. The one that I had sort of at my fingertips was the city of Portland is looking at the installation of a 90 kW photovoltaic or solar electric system valued at about $900,000. That's a pretty large system, and I believe it's on some park facility or park pool facility, and would not be otherwise affordable to the city. There are similar applications either by public bodies or by nonprofit entities. I know the Bonneville Environmental Foundation is looking at a similar installation. And the way this works is that you have a group of private investors that come together that purchase the system, and those investors have an appetite for tax credits, take the business energy tax credit. Once they've exhausted the tax credits, they then flip the ownership to either the public body or the nonprofit entity that has, you know, in essence commissioned the system. If the property tax liability stayed in place, that would kind of mess up the financing in essence for the project. If you provided the property tax exemption, that would keep in place the financial incentives that the property that the business energy tax credits provide. That's it in a nutshell. The amendment would sunset as noted on line 12, line 12, page 1, on July 1, 2012.
Along with the rest of the...
Along with the rest of the...
Statute.
Yes.
Right. Questions? Comments?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Butler.
Is this similar, Jeff, to the exemption that's presently afforded for the use of or for the installation on a residence from of a solar or photovoltaic usage or other passive usage that's used on their property? It exempts them from the property tax while it's being used on their property.
Yes.
That would be similar to this then?
Yes.
Okay.
So what's the change? What's the difference?
The change is the way the law currently reads and the way it's applied, it's probably primarily targeted at utilities to make sure that if they are owning or leasing property, that they're paying their fair share of property taxes. The difference here is that there could be outside investors that are private investors that are probably in this case leasing from either a nonprofit or a public entity the space in which to install the particular system. Under the law, they would be subject to property taxes that would sort of interfere with the financing to facilitate the project. If they are exempt from property taxes, that makes the advantage of the business energy tax credit much more favorable. That allows the project to go forward. The intention then would be to, once the business energy tax credits are used up, they can then turn over ownership to, again, either the public entity or the nonprofit. But as the law currently states in what would essentially be Part 3 of the Section 1 of the amendment, they would be subject to property tax now. The way we sort of parse this out is, and to make a difference to make sure that utilities are still subject to the property tax or any other entity aside from this, is that the main difference is the on-site generation, such as a net metering system. There could be other things that are not net meter that are still on-site, but we wanted to make kind of a reference to so that people would sort of know what we were talking about.
Do we have a definition of net metering someplace?
Yeah, there's an entire net metering statute that I don't have the site for, but it does currently exist in the ORS.
Yes, Representative Berger.
If you indulge me to get me on the right, in your letter of June 5th,
mm-hmm.
You mean the second section of the amendments? Because I can see there's
yes.
No second amendment.
Yeah, yes,
I've been
yes.
looking for that amendment for the last. Thank you.
I apologize for this. I kind of whipped this up kind of at the last minute. And so I did want to underscore that indeed the there are sort of two part. One, to make sure that people know that we're taking the tax credits that were originally in the bill out. And then this section I counted as the second amendment, or the second part of the amendment contained within the dash A6. And then as committee staff noted, the Section 3 is actually currently in the bill, but it was, placed differently. And so Legislative Council included it in this dash 6 as well.
Thank you. I'm still having a hard time parsing sub 4 on page 1. What I just want to parse it through with you, so that I can understand where I've misread it. First, we have to have an alternate energy system. Then it's owned or leased by a person whose principal business activity is a whole bunch of words here, having to do with the with energy. Principal business activity, directly or indirectly, the production, transportation, or distribution of energy. That's the second qualifier. And the third qualifier is that it's a net metering system or other system primarily designed to offset on-site electricity used by the person. Why wouldn't a utility qualify under one of these rules if it simply used a small portion of the energy that it generated on site and then sold the rest of it?
Because that probably, Mr. Chair, because they would probably be producing power that, you know, far exceeds the use of that on-site facility. And I use the example of utility just because that was sort of the easiest one. But again, what we're trying to do is make distinct these new models, these new facilities, from that which is that are outlined in Section 3. And so that is where property tax, you know, is indeed applied. And so what we're saying is that there is an alternative energy system owned or leased by a person whose principal, you know, business activity is, et cetera, and runs very similar to Section 3. Where it splits from Section 3 is if the system is a net metering system or other system for on-site generation. Now, a utility could have some facility that they own that they want to take the tax credit for, and that's fine. My only purpose in the example of utility is that Section 3, as exists in current law, is probably referring to, you know, large-scale energy producers like a utility. And so what we're looking at is...
Let me simplify this.
Okay.
Is there some exception, some sideboard in the net metering system law that would take a major plant out of this definition?
Because
would you tell us what those are?
Because the net metering statute is intended for those systems where the balance of power, as it were, for energy used and energy produced is about equal. And that is usually not the case for a utility or some other independent power producer whose intention it is to create large amounts of power to sell on the market or to sell for use of their customer, but not to offset the power used by a particular site, whether that be a home or a business or some other public facility.
So if an electric utility put on their own office building a set of solar panels and that generated 105% of the power needed by the building, but not at night, of course. So it was sold some during the day and bought some during the night. That becomes a net metering system.
That is that would be correct.
Okay. On the other hand, if they had a power plant that produced many kilowatts of power and they used 3% of that in their office building, that would not be a net metering system.
That's correct.
Okay.
And right now there's Mr. Chair, a sense of the scale here. There's current rulemaking going on at the PUC to reestablish the net metering limit. That limit is looking like it's going to be about a 2-megawatt limit, which is fairly sizable, but when you consider that most power plants are probably from the 100 to 500 average megawatts, that kind of gives you a sense of the scale.
Or larger if you're a big dam.
Yes.
And then the on-site, then this last exception, primarily designed to offset on-site electric use by the person. I assume that means something smaller than net metering.
No, that would actually be the precise definition of, not precise, but that would be like a net metering system. But again, the intention of the installed energy system is not to produce enough power to generate and sell on the market. It's to offset, to meet mainly the power needs of the particular building that it's attached to.
Okay. You can see the point of my questions is
absolutely
to make sure we're not giving away the store.
And that was the intention of this, is to try and really narrow it down so that we weren't letting out people that we did not intend to let out.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Other questions or comments? Representative Burton.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. I am not technically knowledgeable enough to even come up with the right questions around this solar energy issue, so I appreciate your questioning here. I am always a little bothered by this kind of a thing where I read, using a financing model that does not currently exist, in the last month of a session with a gut and stuff. I will support this proposal until I get other information. Okay, Mr. Chair, because there may be other information out there that I don't have.
May I join you?
And I am sure that someone will run to my office with it if I get sideways in supporting this. But I, frankly, that kind of language makes me just very nervous. And you wrote it.
I admit, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I do appreciate that hesitancy. Again, the model doesn't exist simply because it doesn't work out financially. This piece is what it needs to work out financially, to my knowledge. And, you know, this is an issue that actually has been raised a few times, not only in front of this committee, but with other legislators and other interested parties. To my knowledge, there isn't any opposition to this. If somebody comes running to you panicked about it, I'll be very interested to know about that. Because
Mr. Chair, it's less about opposition than just stepping off into places that we have not been before. And, you know, you just are never quite sure when there's a lot of technicalities around this solar energy and net metering and whatnot that I'm feeling very inexpert about.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, for the record, and we did try and sort of parse this, you know, very precisely and very narrowly, the industry, the solar industry in particular, has also, you know, conferred with other parts of, you know, and we're really talking about is the small scale aspect of the renewable energy industry. And there were some issues that we had to work out with the small scale wind industry and that sort of thing. And this is the language that sort of satisfied everybody across the board. So, you know, there's always something that could pop up, but we've been pretty careful to draw this pretty tightly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Has the Department of Revenue looked at this?
I know the Department of Energy has, and they
Department
have no
of Energy has,
and they have no problem with
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if the Department of Revenue has, because there is no revenue generated from this.
Right, and you're right. The Department of Energy is the expert in that.
And they have looked at this, and they have no problem with
it. And how about the county assessors? Any of them have a problem with this that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, but...
All right. So they're on notice now that if there's a problem, Representative Berger expects to hear from them.
And I suspect they'll probably be waiting for us over in the Senate, too.
That's right. Further? Anything further? Thank you. Yes, Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move the A6 amendments to House Bill 3488.
Representative Reed moves the A6 amendments to House Bill 3488. Further discussion? Is there objection to the A6? Seeing no objection, they're adopted. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3488 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Reed moves House Bill 3488 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now to staff, have we taken out the pieces that have a direct revenue impact on the state? By passing this amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there will be a we expect there will be a property tax, a local property tax revenue impact.
And of course, that's a theological question, isn't it? Because if the facilities don't exist, there's no property tax. And if the facilities do exist, but they're exempt from property tax, there's no property tax.
Thank you.
Anything else? Would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Excuse.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair Barnes?
Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, the bill goes to the floor with, as amended, with a due pass recommendation. Who would like to carry?
Not me.
Representative Witt? Thank you. Representative Witt will carry. And with that, we have finished the work session on House Bill 3488, and the committee is in recess pending further call of the chair.
Are we coming back today?
I hope not. Thank you.